Marco.
Yeah, so come on.
Excuse
God
me.
just got home, so.
Okay. Mirandola.
It isn't gone.
Okay. I'm gonna mute.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please join me in saying the Anna Bakoa. Anna Bekoach, Gedulat Shemincha, Tatir, Serura, Aleph Bet Gimel, Yutat Sadi, Kabel Rinai, Amcha Sagvenu, Taharenu, Nora, Kufrei Shayan, Sintet Nun, Nagibor, Dorshechutcha, Kevavat, Shamren, Nun Gimel Dalet, Yud Kaf Shin. Barhem tacharem, brachame sitkatcha, tamid gamlem, betet resh, saditat gimel. Kasim kadosh, bero tuha, nael adata, et kufbet, tet dunayan. Yachid ge'e lamcha b'nei zokrei kedushata Yud Gimel Lamed e'zayim kuf Shavatenu kabel u'shmatzia katenu yodeya talubo Shin kufal sadiyuta. We've brought the energy of creation into our space. We will now separate between our right column energy and the left column energy of this creation, utilizing the 13 attributes of mercy. Adonai Yohe Wahe, Adonai Yohe Wahe, El Rachum V'chanun, Erech Apaim the Rav Chesed Be'emet, Notzer Chesed La'alafim, Nosea'on Wafesha, V'chata'av V'nakei. Today's class is a class on with the teachings of the Sefer Yetzirah. You can find the handout on the Hashem website. That's www.yeshem.com. On that page, you'll see a link in the red bar at the top that says Revealed Wisdom. Click on that link. Then scroll down till you find the matrix. And if you go to row 9 of that matrix, the second column from the left, is a link to the Sefer Yetzirah classes. When that opens up, this is class number 2. And when you click on the class number 2 handout, it opens up to a location, the origin of the Sefer Yetzirah. Does anybody have any questions before we begin? Then we will begin with Elisham Yehud. Lashem Yehud Kutchabarichu Ishkinte Bidhilu Urshimu Udhilu Udhilu Urshimu Leachta Lashem Yudhe Bavavhe The Yehuda Shalim Bashem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La Sok Torah Mitzvah Vaino Amadunai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kunanei Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kunanei. As we said in the introduction class, class number 1, I hope you're doing your homework. I don't test whether you're doing your homework because this is a choice you make. It's a class designed around experiencing what you will experience. And part of that experience is your relationship to the Hebrew letters. You don't have to be able to read Hebrew, but there are different forms of meditation depending on your personal experience with the Hebrew letters. And that's what that homework is designed to assist you with. The origin of the Sefer Yetzirah. There is a cryptic story in the Babylonian Talmud that states that on the eve of every Shabbat, Yudah HaNasi's pupils, Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Hoshaya, who devoted themselves especially to cosmogony, they used to create a delicious calf by means of the Sefer Yetzirah and ate it on the Sabbath. Now, you can read that story or hear that story as a story, a fable, a make-believe. Or you can understand that with the tools of the Sefer Yetzirah, that ability is available to you. You can create something from nothing. Actually, you're not creating it from nothing. You're creating it from other essences, other energies. But being able to create it is a tool, is a goal, is something that you can do if you choose to. But it takes a development. It takes working with the knowledge that you'll be given in this class, in this series of classes. Mystics assert that the biblical patriarch Abraham used miraculous creations. In the book of Genesis, it speaks of the war of the five kings versus the four kings. And it says that Abraham rescued his nephew Lot with 318 men. The Midrash says that it was actually only one man, his servant Eliezer, and Abraham and Eliezer, using the tools of the Sefer Yetzirah, created miracles that are attributed to these rabbis in other generations. They created miracles that rescued Abraham's nephew. The Sefer Yetzirah's appendix declares that Abraham was the recipient of the divine revelation of mystic lore. It is revealed by all practicing Kabbalists until the 20th century that Abraham was the author of the Sefer Yetzirah. Among them are the rabbis of the classical rabbinic era and the philosopher Kabbalists such as Sadia Gaon, who lived around the year 1000, Shabtai Donolo, who lived around the year 13 or 1400, and Yehuda Halevi, the author of the Kuzari, which I believe was written in the 15 or 1600s. They never doubted that Abraham was the author of the book. In another book, Pardes Rimonim, Moses ben Jacob Cordovero, known as the Rabbah, mentions a minority opinion that Rabbi Akiva authored the Sefer Yetzirah and takes it to mean Abraham wrote it and Akiva redacted it to its current form. Jewish Midrash attributes the teaching to the book of Raziel given to Adam, and that from Adam it passed over to Hanoch ben Yared, and then to Noah, who gave it to his eldest son Shem, who is called Malkitzedek. And Malkitzedek transferred this book, this wisdom, the high priesthood, to Abraham, the friend of Hashem, along with the high priesthood of the world. My commentary. The worldly high priesthood is an important concept in Kabbalah and is not shared with most teachers to their students. The teaching is concealed in the idea of Aaron becoming the high priest instead of Moshe. According to modern historians, the origin of the text is unknown and hotly debated. Some scholars believe it might have been an early medieval origin, while others emphasize earlier traditions appearing in the book. The division of the letters into three classes of vowels, mutes, and consonants also appears in Hellenic texts, which are Jewish texts that were influenced by the Greek culture. It is rumored, and my intuition says it is true, that every Greek philosopher studied with one of the Jewish sages, which is where the Western civilization gets its wisdom. The source is in the Jewish culture. The source of the wisdom of Greece is in the Torah. Many people will dispute that. It is up to you to make that decision for yourself. But the people who are specifically mentioned in the various writings who were taught by the sages of the Sanhedrin, Plato, Aristotle, and Pythagoras. The historical origin of the Sefer Yetzirah was placed by Ratzenstein, obviously an author, in the second century before the Common Era. And according to Christopher P. Benton, the Hebrew grammatical form places its origin closer to the period of the Mishnah, around the second century of the Common Era. And this is an unwritten commentary, but this is the same dispute that took place with what is the source, the origin of the Zohar. Because one of the arguments is the language that is used does not fit certain time periods, and therefore it has to be written in a time when the language of the document fits the language of the times. The argument against that is a mystical argument. The argument against that is someone who is connected to Hashem through meditation and hitbodidut, a term of cleaving to God, can receive languages from times and periods and vocabulary that is not their physical time. But they can be taught this, they can be influenced to use this through their meditations and who they learn from in those meditations. There is a manuscript in the British Museum that the Sefer Yetzirah is called Hilkot Yetzirah and declared to be esoteric lore, not accessible to anyone but the truly pious. My commentary. The Talmud has a cryptic one-line statement that the Sefer Yetzirah was originally written by Abraham, who was the world's first and the world's foremost astrologer of his generation. It was originally written as a book of outreach to his generation, so that they would learn how to know the Creator. It consisted of 400 chapters. Our current versions, and we will discuss the multiple manuscripts below, our current versions only have 6 chapters. Does this mean that we have lost this information? The answer is not necessarily. It may very well be revealed in certain teachings written in the Talmud, but the Talmud was an oral compilation. The Talmud could have brought all of these secrets and concealed them in the writings and the stories of the Talmud itself. And then there are writings of various Kabbalists over the centuries who may have received the information from their teachers, and their teachers may not have been physical, but they were taught in their meditations. And what were they taught? Whatever they were taught, they usually wrote down or taught it to other students, so that the information has been carried across the centuries, student from teacher to student from teacher. That mechanism has always worked. And we have a story about the Baal Shem Tov who lived in the 1700s, 1800s, that one Shabbat he became sad in the third meal of the Shabbat, that Saturday afternoon. He became saddened, and his students noticed that normally that is the time of goodwill when there is great joy in the Kabbalists. And then after the Shabbat was over, his students asked him about the momentary sadness. And he explained that he had received a particular piece of wisdom that only one human being in the world possesses that wisdom at any one time. And if the person who has that piece of wisdom does not have a student capable of handling the wisdom, it will show up in the mind of the person who is capable. And that he had received this at this time in the third meal, and he knew from his meditations who was the person who possessed this piece of wisdom prior to him. And it was a Kabbalist who lived in Morocco. And when he received the information, he knew that this Kabbalist had left the world, had passed away. And that was his momentary sadness, that the world had lost such a righteous individual. You can accept these stories as stories and fables. And it's not real. Or you can understand it as confirming to you what your own intuition tells you when you utilize these tools and you experience what you experience. But all of that is up to you. It is your free choice. The only thing that we ask is not to believe what I say, but to do what I recommend to do. And over time, 2, 3, 4 months, you will come to know the truth of what I am saying. One of the foremost writers of these esoteric tools is Rabbi Abu Lafia. He was excommunicated by the rabbis of the 13th century, and his writings were outlawed and banned. They have only been recently translated in the last 30 years. We will be teaching some of these techniques as they are unique meditative tools. I think it is good to have a quick study of Rabbi Abu Lafia, as the story is amazing and miraculous and does impact your thinking if you allow it to. Rabbi Abu Lafia was a Kabbalist who decided to go see the Pope. He didn't just decide, he was told in his meditations that he needed to talk to the Pope. And if he went and met the Pope, it would usher in a world of peace. And the Mashiach would manifest at that time. Many people, intellectual people, would say that he was slightly unbalanced mentally, or firmly unbalanced mentally. But many other people would just understand that he received this message and he followed it through. He traveled a number of thousand miles from where he was to Rome. And he arrived at the gates of Rome. And then he went and arrived at the gates of the Vatican, which is a separate city from Rome. But people don't really remember that much. And he demanded to see the Pope because he had a message from Hashem for the Pope. And he was arrested, and while in today's generation he would be put into an insane asylum, in those generations, they just put them in jail. And he spent approximately 3 months in jail under a decree of death. The Pope had declared that he should be killed, but while the Pope was contemplating that sentence, whether to carry it out or not, the Pope died. He died the day before he was to be executed. And because when the Pope dies, all the prisoners are set free and all the decrees are released, he was set free and went about his way. Is it coincidence that the Pope died rather than to hang Abulafia? That is up to you to determine for yourself. The current Jewish academic thinking, the writers indicate that Rabbi Akiva is considered the author. The Kabbalists teach that the author is Abraham, the patriarch. And for me, the teaching of the Ramak, indicating that Abraham wrote it and the Rabbi Akiva redacted it to our present level, is what is correct. There are multiple versions of the Sefer Yetzirah. There is the short version, the long version, the Sadia Gaon version, and the Gra version. And that's just a few of the different versions. And the differences among these versions tend to be minor, associated with the intellectual writers and studies historians. But my commentary is that these differences are major, in the sense that you can have a whole verse that is inserted and you have a whole section that's not inserted in others. We use the Gra version, which is commented on by the writings of the Ramak. And then it has additional verses in chapter 1 than some of the other versions, which is why my teacher chose to use it. The most famous English translation is by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, and many people get this copy to follow along with my classes. I do identify most of where the differences lie. It's up to you if you want to get this book. I strongly suggest you do the work and practice what is taught and what I recommend for you to do. Reading the Kaplan version does help the English speaker, but not if you think of it as the work itself. If you think of it as a commentary to the work, and you do the actions, that is the proper approach, in my opinion. The first two versions that I mentioned, the short version and the long version, the short version has 1,300 words, and the long version about 2,600 words. And Abraham Abulafia, in his writings, noted the existence of both of them. In the 10th century, the Sedya Gaon wrote his commentary based on a manuscript, which was a reorganized copy of the longer version. And this is now called the Sadhya version. In the 16th century, the Ari, Rabbi Isaac Luria, redacted the text, the short version, to harmonize it with the Zohar. And then in the 18th century, the Gra, Rabbi Eliyahu, the Gaon of Vilna, further redacted this. And this is now called the Gra version. It's important for you to realize that the Gra teaches a form of Kabbalah which is different and unique from the version that is followed by the majority of people today. His version relates to the concept of Mashiach ben Yosef, or Mashiach ben Ephraim, and it strives to put Mashiach into consciousness rather than into a physical person. The influence. The Sefer Yetzirah, and understand this is still, I'm writing from the Wikipedia essay, so it's very intellectual right now. It will not always be that in art classes. The Sefer Yetzirah is devoted to speculations concerning Hashem's creation of the world. The ascription of its authorship to the biblical patriarch Abraham shows the high esteem which it enjoyed for centuries. It may even be said that this work had a greater influence on the development of the Jewish mind than almost any other book after the completion of the Talmud. The Sefer Yetzirah is exceedingly difficult to understand on account of its obscure style. The difficulty is rendered still greater by the lack of a critical edition, the present text being much interpolated and altered. Since there is a wide divergence of opinion regarding the age, the origin, the contents, and the value of the book, since it is variously regarded as the Temple era. My commentary. The Sefer Yetzirah is extremely valuable for the study of Kabbalah. It teaches the essence of the letters. It teaches various meditation techniques. It teaches the spiritual world structure of the Sefirot. It deals with gematria and with letter substitutions. It also shows many correspondences between frames of reference. The structure. The Sefer Yetzirah describes how the universe was created by Hashem, the God of Israel. A list of all of God's Hebrew names appears in the first sentence of the book, through 32 wondrous ways of wisdom. Not all of the God's names are listed there, but there are many. And knowing why there are many is very much part of the process of learning what the Sefer Yetzirah has to teach you. 10 numbers, which are Sefirot. In the later Kabbalah, meaning after the Ari, the origin of the Sefirot, the word Sefirot, really means a number. There are 22 letters. Why are there 22 letters? There are three mother letters. There are seven double letters, seven letters that have double sounds, two different sounds. And there are 12 simple letters, or they're referred to as elementals. If you'd add 12 plus 7 plus 3, totals 22. Is that the reason there are 22 letters? No, that's the effect. The essence is there are 22 letters. Why there are 22 letters is something that you will need to contemplate as you develop your spiritual level. The three divisions, or these divisions, correspond to the Jewish concept, such as the three letters making up God's name, Yud, Hey, and Vav. The 7 days of the Jewish week, and every other culture has 7 days in a week, relates to the seven letters that have two sounds. Why do they have two sounds? Because there's a day and a night. There's a light and a dark in each of the 7 days of the week. The 12 tribes of Israel relate to the 12 months of the Hebrew calendar, as well as to early scientific or philosophical ideas, such as the four elements, fire, water, air, and earth, the four metals, gold, silver, copper, and bronze, the seven planets, the 10 directions, the 12 zodiacal constellations, and various human physical functions, and a list of the parts of the body. The book describes how God used the 10 Sephirot and the 22 Hebrew letters in various combinations. And finally, as described in the closing section of the book, how he revealed the secret to Abraham as a covenant with him. God's covenant with Abraham is described as being twofold. Between the 10 toes of the feet is the covenant of the circumcision, of the Brit Milah. And between the 10 fingers of the hands, also identified with the 10 Sephirot, is the covenant of the tongue, which means the word for tongue is Lashon in Hebrew, but it also can be translated as a language, the covenant of the language. The last sentence describes how Hashem connects the 22 letters of the Torah to Abraham's tongue and reveals its secret to Abraham. The phonetic system. The philosophical logical is discussed first, since it is necessary for an elucidation of the philosophical speculations of the work. The 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet are classified both with reference to the position of the vocal organs in producing the sounds and with regard to consonant intensity. In contrast to the Jewish grammarians, who assumed a special mode of articulation for each of the five groups of sounds, the Sefer Yetzirah says that no sound can be produced without the tongue, to which the other organs of speech merely lend assistance. Hence, the formations of letters is described as follows. With the tip of the tongue and the throat, between the lips and the tip of the tongue, in the middle of the tongue, by the tip of the tongue, by the tongue which lies flat and stretched, and by the teeth. The letters are distinguished, moreover, by the intensity of the sound necessary to produce them, and are accordingly divided into mutes, which are unaccompanied by sound, such as the mem sibilants, such as the shin, which is therefore called the hissing shin, and the aspirant, such as the aleph, which holds a position between the mutes and the sibilants, and is designated as the airy aleph, which holds the balance in the middle. Besides these three letters, which are called mothers, a distinction is also drawn between the seven double letters and the 12 simple letters, the remaining characters of the alphabet. My commentary. The above section is not completely correct, so please disregard it. The reason I left it on the page will become evident as we go through the letters and their correspondences, and that'll take about 5 months, once a week. One can learn from every source, and one must learn how to limit the influence of corrupting material on their consciousness. This is also one of the reasons that I left this in. Teachings. Both the macrocosm, the outer total universe, and the microcosm, mankind, are viewed in this system as products of the combination and permutation of these mystical characters. And such a use of the letters by the Jews for the formation of the holy name for thaumaturgical purposes is attested by the magic papyri that quote an angelic book of Moses, which was full of allusions to biblical names. The linguistic theories of the author of the Sefer Yetzirah are an integral component of his philosophy, its other parts being astrological and Gnostic cosmogony. The three letters, Aleph, Mem, and Shin, are not only the three mother letters from which the other letters of the alphabet are formed, but they are also symbolical figures for the three primordial elements, the substances which underlie all of existence. According to the Sefer Yetzirah, the first emanation from the spirit of Hashem was the Ruach, which is the spirit, but it also means wind or air. And this produced water, which in its turn formed the genesis of fire. In the beginning, however, these three substances had only a potential existence and came into actual being only by means of the three letters, Aleph, Mem, and Shin. The Aleph produced air, the Mem water, and the Shin fire. And as these are the principal parts of speech, so those three substances are the elements from which the cosmos has been formed. The cosmos consists of three parts: the world, the year, which is time, and man, which are combined in such a way that the three primordial elements are contained in each of the three categories. The water formed the earth, heaven was produced from fire, and the Ruach produced the air between heaven and earth. The three seasons of the year, winter, summer, and the rainy season, correspond to water, fire, and Ruach in the same way as man consists of a head, corresponding to fire, a torso, represented by ruach, and the other parts of the body equivalent to water. The seven double letters produce the seven planets, the 7 days, and the seven aperture in man, which are 2 eyes, 2 ears, 2 nostrils, and 1 mouth. Again, as the 7 double letters vary, being pronounced either hard or soft, so the 7 planets are in continuous movement, approaching or receding from the earth. The 7 days, in like manner, were created by the 7 double letters, because they change in time according to their relation to the planets. The 7 apertures in man connect him with the outer world, as the 7 planets join heaven and earth. Hence, these organs are subject to the influence of the planets, the right eye being under Saturn, the left eye is under Jupiter, and the other parts of the body come under other planets. The 12 simple letters created the 12 signs of the zodiac, whose relation to the earth is always simple or stable, and to them belong the 12 months in time, and the 12 leaders in man. The latter are those organs which perform functions in the body, independent of the outside world. These are like the hands, the feet, the kidneys, the gall, the intestines, the stomach, the liver, the pancreas, and the spleen, and they are accordingly subject to the 12 signs of the zodiac. In its relation to the construction of the cosmos, matter consists of the 3 primordial elements, which, however, are not chemically connected with one another, but modify one another physically. Power emanates from the 7 and the 12 heavenly bodies, or in other words, from the planets and the signs of the zodiac. The dragon rules over the world, matter, and heavenly bodies. The sphere rules time, and the heart rules over the human body. The author sums up this explanation in a single sentence. The dragon is likened to a king on his throne, the sphere like a king traveling in his country, and the heart like a king at war. This is the end of our class. Next week, we will begin reading at this location about creation. And we will have a few more weeks before we get into the actual structure of the book. The purpose of these introductory lessons is to prepare you so that when we do get into the book, you have a much better chance of receiving the wisdom. Are there any questions? While you're unmuting yourselves, I'll remind you there are 2 more classes today. One is at 4:30 West Coast time, and that's a Zohar class, a deeper Zohar class, and one at 7 p.m., which is a regular Zohar class. And if you're interested, what is the difference? A regular Zohar class is we read the Aramaic, we read the English translation, we read the commentary that I may have written, and I move on to the next verse. We don't delve into it unless there is a question. The deeper Zohar class, we read the Aramaic, We read the English translation, and we read my commentary on that particular verse. And then we discuss it. We try to discuss it in depth, but that depends on the questions asked. The Deeper Zohar class is a half hour long. It's from 4:30 to 5, Monday to Thursday. The regular Zohar classes appear Motzi Shabbat. Again, that's at 7 p.m. West Coast time, and on Thursday night at 7 p.m. West Coast time. Does anyone have any questions about this class or any other subject? If not, I wish you a beautiful afternoon and look forward to speaking to you with the later classes. Shalom Gadol to everyone.
Shalom Gadol. Thank you. Shalom Gadol. Thank you. Thank you.